to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike.
This week on Minority Corner,
what you working on?
Well, aside from sweating my teats off, the tits are off. They're sweaty and they're wet and they're gone.
Oh my God.
I am revisiting a conversation from last week where someone posed a question of where are the lesbian bars? And I did a deep dive into that I watched a few different documentaries and read a few different articles.
Oh,
and
wow.
Looking at to where the, I think the lesbian bar might be in a transformational stage. So we're going to look at the history and where it's going.
Cool. Well, I'm excited to find out more about that.
And what have you been up to? Who you been talking to?
I got the chance to interview one of the contestants from the new NBC show Making It. So that should be really exciting. Talking about crafting and how to live your passion. It's awesome.
Oh, that sounds fucking awesome. Oh my God, I can't wait to get into that. And then I think there's just some pop cultural things. I have an apology to make to two TV shows that we've discussed here.
I got a movie recommendation and yeah.
All right, well, let's jump into it, lady love.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Ooh, booty sweat.
Yeah, it must be hot.
I got it.
Yeah.
I got
it's
it.
Hot in
oh,
New York.
I can feel the sweat dripping down my butt cracks.
Just paint the listeners a picture. You,
because it's because it's a radio play that we're doing, and so I just do old timey and take you guys there.
The actual like dripping noises.
I was gonna say that it used to be the sound effects.
Yeah, bloop. I know exactly.
A bloop.
Where's your slide whistle?
Yeah, we're taking you to the moment, listeners. How are you doing?
Oh,
it's Friday for y'all, or Saturday, or 2 years from now.
Who knows?
From
whenever you're listening.
Who knows?
But right now, it is a Monday for us.
It is a Monday for us. The future is, you know, they all, I think Albert Einstein said it best.
Okay, what did he say?
And I'm probably.
What'd that Jose?
Something about like time is relative or something.
Yeah.
So
time is a circle. Arrival. Mm. Have you seen that movie?
Ooh. Oh, girl, I saw that movie and changed my life.
I love that movie.
That movie. Oh, I did too. That movie, like, it was one of those movies that I was like, oh my God, life makes so much sense.
Right.
I understand that everything's happening all at once, that time is relevant.
Mm.
My 8-year-old self is having a birthday party right now. Mm. My 80-year-old self is playing with the grandkids right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, all of time is happening all at once. And it inspired the book that I'm writing called The Knowing Heart.
Oh.
So, yeah, I've seen it.
Preview. You better preview the listeners with some upcoming projects. Uh-oh.
It's a little book I'm rewriting.
Okay, it has just a little book. Just casual. Just, you know.
A queer female protagonist.
Oh, you're writing some fiction.
Oh yeah, I have to get you in there. It's gonna be self-help disguised as fiction.
Oh.
Very much like in the vein of The Alchemist.
Or very much like Dianetics, but reverse.
Oh my God, in the vein of Dianetics. Listen, I'm not starting a cult, but some crazy ass people want to start a cult after it. Just give me some money and don't do any weird sex things. Keep the weird sex things out of my cult. Well, not my cult, your cult, based on my writings.
Yes, you got to clarify. You gotta clarify.
Yeah, it's
these
not
things.
Mine. I can't help what these people do.
Oh my God!
And I have a retraction to make.
Okay, retract
away. I have said some foul things about two shows.
Okay.
And you know what? Don't judge a book until you finish reading it. I think they say, or like,
you know, that works.
Watch a TV show.
Okay.
Until it's done. How do you feel? I finished the last two episodes of Westworld. I caught up yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really enjoyed what they ended up doing with it.
Should we say spoiler alert right now? You know, just in case.
Yeah, spoiler alert. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. Spoiler till the day is long.
So just do a
spoiler,
couple skips.
Wild, Wild West.
Just skip, do a couple skips, and then you'll be, if you, you know, are worried about that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Are we in it now?
Yeah, we're in it.
Can we go?
Yes.
Okay. It all started, the turnaround happened for me when they did the Ghost Nation episode.
I love that episode.
About the Native, the First Nations people.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were horribly represented up until, season 2, episode 7?
Yeah. We talked about it on the show.
We did. We were, like, really hella side-eyeing it. And then they... Yeah, I don't know. I feel like my issues surrounding race have dissolved. Mm. And because they also, I felt like, told a really, really great story. Mm-hmm. There's two awesome black women doing great things in the storylines, very prominently fixed. Mm-hmm. And I just thought they told a really good story.
Yeah, I mean, two. I think we were kind of... I was a little bit... more forgiving at first, and you were still kind
I was
of
not.
Like, yeah, yeah, you were still kind of side-eyeing them, where yeah. I was kind of more of like, yeah, they could have did it better, but I see the purpose of where they're coming from. For me, the turnaround was the episode where they go to Shogun World.
Oh, where, yeah, that too also turned it around for me, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, because it really dawned on me that, oh, like, the way that the West World was portrayed is not actual Wild West. It's the way that the fantasy, the television, like, television show, the myth, the horrible things that come along with it, and the stereotypes for that. Like, also with the Raj World, too, where it's, like, colonial India. It's, like, where rich white people want to live out their fantasies. So, like, yeah. Shogun World is not actual feudal Japan. It's fucking right. a movie. It's the... Yeah. It's like the Quentin Tarantino version of that time period. So right, like,
rich white fantasy of things.
Yeah, and I love how they interweave the subversiveness in it, where it starts to bubble up. Like, the fact that nobody cares about the Native Americans in Westworld allowed them to go under the radar for so many years and become enlightened, you know?
Like, right, yeah. And they had to, like, they're like, ooh, they're too peaceful. Or, like, they made the guy, like, they're like, he needs to be more savage.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he was still able to fight against that.
Yeah.
I do feel like, though, maybe we have evened out a little bit now, because in the finale, I do feel like the Native Americans were kind of given that, like, noble savior shit that they always give minorities. Like, they were the ones that were shepherding everybody into, like, the server kind of, you know, they were the ones that were like, go first before me, you know, like, it, I feel like when people want to overcompensate about the shit that they did to minorities, they make us into, like, you know, it's the whole, like, black women are magic and black women are queens. Right. It's like, no, let us just be, like, fucking regular. You don't have to overcompensate just because you were hella shitty to us, you know? Like,
yeah. So I guess I saw, like, within the world of the story, I thought, like, yeah, get the fuck out of there, Native people. This world is shitty. Like, I saw as, like, an escape, and, like, they get to escape out of that world, and other people got to follow along as well. Mm-hmm. But I do understand what it is that you're saying, but I'm also glad that they got to get the fuck out of there, because it's a terrible place.
Yeah, no, yeah, completely agree. Okay, so what's the other show?
I was only, like, maybe two or three episodes into Luke Cage, and I was like, it's boring, I'm not into it.
Yeah.
Wrong! Sorry, the season of Luke Cage, I still have three episodes left. It is so fucking dope. It is blowing my mind. Alfre Woodard is amazing in it. She is so great. Like, I think everybody, if you watched Daredevil, people really were taken away by how amazing a villain the Kingpin was. Mariah, to me, is like, Alfre Woodard is like the new amazing villain, like, best villain that's ever been. Like, she's just, she really comes into her own. And Alfre Woodard, like, she's such an amazing actress. Like, she just, like, you can tell she's having so much fun. The way that she just delivers her lines in the moment, she's fucking dope as fuck.
I feel like Alfre Woodard has been around for years, and she hasn't gotten the credit she deserves.
Yeah. I actually think this is, like, an Emmy Award-winning performance. I hope that her people are because it's all, like, it's all political. It's like, are people going to spend the money on running a campaign for you in terms of, like, award season and stuff?
I hope that
they're spending money on her, because, like, it's a really dope performance. And remember years ago when I announced that they were going to do Luke Cage and that Alfre Woodard was going to be a villain, and I had said that she was going to play Black Mariah, right?
Right.
And then they just named her, like, Mariah instead.
Which I'm glad they did.
She has an amazing moment where she talks about being teased and called. Like, her skin was so dark that they teased her and called her Black Mariah. And so that's what I love about the writers.
That's a good twist.
Exactly. They, like, are taking the actual, like, comic book like history and doing really dope things with it. Like it's a very rich world that they're they're really creating and leaning into. Misty Knight and Colleen Wing have like an episode where they're the daughters of Dragon, essentially kind of leaning into that, being all dope as fuck. Wow. Misty Knight is super dope. They also talk about, I won't say who, but they talk about something I've never seen talked about in storytelling before. And that's like, what happens when you have a lover in prison and you both return to the real world?
Oh, acclimating.
Well, but like in prison was one set of rules and now you're outside in the real world. And to see like a show of like Luke Cage that's talking about like man on man love that was in prison and now we're out of prison, like in a comic book, like a black comic book story, I was like, what the fuck? This is amazing. I've never seen this before. So doing big things. I still have 3 episodes left. It's so great.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. That's really good.
So I apologize.
To who? To the show?
To the show. To Alfrey Woodard. I didn't know. Also, Rosario Dawson finally like leaves after a few seasons and a few episodes, and I'm like, oh, the show can breathe now.
Oh, you felt like she was stifling
it? I think so. I feel like we had already done that plot with Claire. It wasn't really going anywhere further. I think she's best just moving around to different shows within the Marvel world. Tis me thoughts about it.
I'll have to check it out. I have a recommendation.
What's your recommendation?
Actually. Well, last night... Well, it's a hesitant recommendation.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I went and saw Sorry to Bother You last night. Oh,
I was trying to see that because I had a feeling that you had seen it and I thought we could talk about it. I haven't seen it yet, but yay.
Okay, well, I won't talk about it too much, but I will say it blew my face off. It's one of those movies where you feel like you know you're going into it for one reason and then you leave and you're like, that took a 180 turn that I was not expecting at all in my life.
You know who assistant directed that?
Your friend.
Yeah, Brian Benson, who we've had on the show. Yeah.
Which is so awesome. Isn't that crazy? And it's so crazy, and it's a full local movie. It's filmed in Oakland, and it is Oakland, and Oakland is referenced, and it isn't like Oakland, woo, movie star Oakland. It's just straight up Oakland.
So you feel like one of the places that Oakland was well represented?
Yes. And like one of the places that they filmed was like right around the corner from my house where we were like, oh, like one of the places that they filmed was like right outside of Andrew's old work. Like, what?
That's crazy.
And it makes sense. You can tell that Boots Riley, the director, is from Oakland and knows Oakland well because it wasn't like, oh, the office building is in this area and then they go to lunch 10 miles away. Like, no, it's like everything that is spatial makes complete sense. And it doesn't take away, and it's totally surreal. It's very like John Malkovich. Like, it's bizarre. It's gross. It's political. It's like abstract.
Ooh.
It's wild. It's like, there are some moments that I agree with, some moments I don't agree with. There's so many things to unpack,
right.
And it's fucking hilarious. Like, I haven't been in a movie where I was like, it's funny, you know, and they'll go back to back. Like one moment will be completely shocking and you'll be like scared.
What?
And then the next moment you're cracking up. Like it's literally one of the craziest things that I've seen in a while. And I'm like, not even, I feel like this is like hyperbole, but like I feel like a lot of people aren't going to like it.
Okay.
But I feel like a lot of people are going to like it.
I get it. It's not going to be for everybody because it's so.
Right.
It sounds like it's very subversive.
It is.
Well, I am. It's on my list, and and who's in it? But Tessa Thompson, who's also in Westworld.
Yes!
I mean, we can't shake a stick at something without Tessa Thompson being in it. And
she's doing her thing
I keep thinking that at any moment because she's getting so big, I'm like, oh, Westworld's going to kill her off, and it just never happens. If anything, I think she's gonna have an even larger part next season.
And you know what? I'm not even at oversaturation with her.
No,
I'm happy to see her.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Because I feel like in everything that she does, it's so good. Like even in this movie, she's like so effervescent and like totally different from Westworld.
Yeah,
like a completely different character.
Right.
I I am curious. I don't want to, like, I'm not saying anything about the plot because there's a crazy, like, it goes in a direct, like, you watch the trailer and
the trailer already
bizarre.
Looks fucking crazy. So I'm, like, not surprised the movie's fucking crazy as well.
And then you go in and you're like, what? Like, it's, I want to talk to you about it because there's a lot of commentary and there's a lot of, and I feel like, being black, I think there's a lot of, it's for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's for everybody, yeah. I feel like. Probably not capitalist.
Okay.
It's definitely anti-capitalist. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like there are messages that will trigger black people more than other people. Like, there's just certain little winks and nods that I caught on to. And I went with all of my great friends, but none of them were black.
Right.
So I would be interested to talk to someone, you know.
Me? I'm black. Person. I'll talk to you about it. Well, it's on my list to see it this week. I got my movie
out,
pass,
everybody.
So I'm going to go see it.
It's wild.
Yeah,
it is.
You know what else is wild? Well, Scarlett Johansson decided to not take a role this time around she shouldn't be playing.
She needs to, after it blew up in her face, though, it took her, like...
Just to reiterate so people know what we're talking about. So, Scarlett Johansson was going to be playing Dante Tex Gill in this upcoming movie called Rub and Tug, which is a transgender man, and she is now not going. She dropped out. She said she's not going to do it.
I'm glad. I'm glad, because also, here's the first thing. Somebody wrote an article, and I thought it was very... it was great. And so Chaz Bono is the son of Cher and Sonny Bono.
Yep.
Trans man. I don't know if he acts, but he was in the spotlight for a while.
He was on a list of trans actors that could play this part.
Yeah. So the character in this movie, Rub and Tug, what is it? Tex Gill, you said?
Tex Gill.
Was a trans man who ran
Dante Tex Gill. Oh, yeah. Like a brothel.
Dante Tex Gill. A brothel, like a rub
sex
and tug,
actors,
where you go and get a massage
sex
and
workers.
Blah, blah, blah. But they showed a picture of Dante Tex Gill. Looks nothing like Scarlett Johansson.
So it was like, why was she even in the running for this part? Like, who was like, hey, Scarlett, this is a role for you?
Looks everything like Chaz Bono.
Oh, my God. Yeah, okay. I didn't realize that. I never saw a picture. That's bananas.
Like legit. Split screen, and, like, casting director, what's your fucking problem?
And, like, I am, you know, I love me some ScarJo, even after, I do like her, even after the whole entire, what is it, Ghost in a Shell debacle, which I fell asleep on and off to, Ghost in a Shell was one of my airplane movies, and I came in and out of that movie enough to know that, like, they kept saying, like, oh, she's not really a Japanese woman. No, it turns out in the end, she was a Japanese woman. She had a very Japanese name, and she was a Japanese woman, so.
They show the picture of a woman, and she's Japanese. It's stupid.
But I love, like, they literally, on the record at interviews, like, oh, she's not really playing a Japanese woman. No, she was.
Yeah.
You liars.
No, I used to be just like you, where I was like, you know what? ScarJo is holding on by a thread even after this, but she's like, whatever. But after she released that statement,
well,
defending why she picked the role, that to me was rude as hell.
Well,
and I lost everything I had for her.
I do have
to
say, but I feel like I don't know the context. I didn't see a video. Like, all I saw was the quote of what Scarlett Johansson said. She pretty much said, like,
rude as hell, though.
But at the same time, like, I don't know the context of that interview. Was she...
I didn't know you had such a flame for Scarlett Johansson.
Well, I think it's the Marvel thing. She's kind of the old, like, the strong, the lady holding it down. She should have, like, Black Widow should have had her own movie a long, long time ago. She wasn't my first pick for Black Widow, but she's grown over on my heart. And she's also one of the few actors in the Marvel movies that gets to also be funny. The female actors that gets to be, you know, all the guys get to be funny, and she gets to be funny. There's not many. Like, Evangeline Lilly, I saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, really great, fucking amazing. Complex female antagonist. I won't even say villain.
Don't say anything, because I need to see it.
Antagonist. And woman of color antagonist. I won't say villain, antagonist, because you find yourself rooting for her at certain times, too. So, just really well done. Ant-Man and the Wasp, really, really dope. What was I talking about? Oh, ScarJo. But, like, here's the thing. I don't know the context of, like, was she at the grocery store and there was a new, like, you know, like, I can't imagine what it's like to be a celebrity and you're always getting bombarded, paparazzi, people are asking you split second questions, and sometimes you kind of just say things that are maybe, if it was a sit down interview and she had said this, then I'd be like, well, what? But like, I don't know the context of that first comment. And I do give people space to grow and learn. In her comment afterwards, yes, it was a probably polished public thing, but it was a learn. Like, I feel like she learned something, and she even said in her comment of why she's not going through with the movie that it was that she learned something about this, and it sparked a conversation that she just really wasn't even aware of. And I think that other actresses will hopefully learn from this as well. I think it was a learning moment, and like, what else can we expect from people except to learn? And I am not one to crucify someone. If you have learned your lesson, then let's move forward.
She should have learned her lesson with Ghost in the Shell is all I'm saying. If somebody were to offer me a role to play a white woman, I would say, why are you doing this?
But that's you because you're hella woke. And, like, not everybody is as woke as you. And I wish that they were. But, you know, I think it's a learn. I think that we've ideally learned from that moment, you know. So you don't think she's learned? She can't learn?
No. I want to give her credit for learning, but she should have learned already. I'm sick, maybe I just am not attached to Scarlett Johansson as much. I don't really care. Yeah. You know, I feel like, one, she's a millionaire. Mm-hmm. She has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. It's not like she's hurting for roles.
Right.
I feel like someone, like, I don't know. I just, there needs to be more of a... It reminds me of white feminism, where it's like people are like, oh, feminism, women power, but me first, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just wish that she could have saw outside of herself a little bit, especially with all the controversy that has happened before with such great shows. Like, Pose is a show that is excellent that I binged all of the episodes recently for, that employees... amazing trans actresses. You know, it's like we're in a new, we're fighting against right now is super crucial. There is forces that are trying to pull us back into prehistoric times, and then there is forces that are trying to push us forward, and entertainment is the number one catalyst of it.
It's the nexus. It shapes everything. I say this like the reason why gay marriage passed was like Glee had a huge part to do with it, and the reason why there's so many more LGBT characters is because Glee helped crack a huge like glass ceiling that just wasn't really there before. Like, even like what, that 7 years ago, like there's TV has changed so much in that time span. Ryan Murphy, Pose.
So that's what I'm trying to say is like, if you are in media, if you are portraying these images, you are already a part of like cutting edge. Yeah. You are seeing this stuff happen around you. And to not be tapped in, to not be, if you want to be successful, like, if you're not just coasting, like in any job, you take classes. Like, I'm a librarian. I still like go to conferences. I still read the material. Yeah. I see what's new and upcoming in my field. So if I were, you know, if I were an actress, even if I was a big time A-list or Hollywood actress, if I wanted to stay fresh and current and not coasting, I would see what the new, you know, what is on the verge, and I would want to support that, and I would want to progress further. So me, after the controversy of Ghost in the Shell, which was not a small controversy, it was huge, people gave her a lot of shit for that.
We gave her a lot of shit. I still give her a lot of shit,
but I mean, like, a lot of people gave her shit for that.
Yeah.
And she then, after that, not actually doing the work and reading up on it and seeing how multifaceted it is, and it isn't just race, it's actually just portraying people who you are, and there isn't a shortage of white women characters, especially for Scarlett Johansson. That, to me, tells me that she doesn't give a fuck, and that is why I'm kind of like, side eye. So, like, that, And also, it isn't just her, because I don't want to put it all on her. It's the casting directors. It's the directors.
Sure.
It's the people. Well, it's the producers.
Absolutely. It's the people. And but like, and I agree everything that you're saying. Just to point out that like a lot of the revolutions that you're talking about in terms of storytelling are happening on television, which I think moves is more with the times than film. I think that film is consistently been slow moving, at least on like mainstream like film. There's not a lot of LGBT characters in general in mainstream movies. Like Moon, like I've seen characters like myself on television, but it wasn't until like Moonlight that I saw my story being told on the silver screen. It's slow moving. It is slow moving.
Well, yeah. Well, hopefully it'll move faster.
Yes, from your lips to my agent's ears and the casting director as well. All right, I got a corner. It is based on last week's episode of a question about where be them lesbian bars, and I did a deep dive. So let's check it out.
I'm excited.
Beginning this summer, you can listen to new episodes of Inside Pop every other week for an even deeper dive inside the world of pop culture.
Now, we're still bringing you our brilliant insight, always-on-the-nose opinions, and insidery inside information on the most interesting pop culture stories of the week.
And we'll also have interviews with the pop culture professionals who create the culture you crave.
For example, we'll speak to casting directors about how they find the right talent for the right role.
We'll talk to music supervisors about how they choose the music to create the right mood.
And we'll grill producers who'll discuss what exactly a producer does.
Oh man, Sean, how many times has someone said to you, oh, you're a producer, so what do you actually do?
So many times.
Same here. So make sure to catch Inside Pop every other Wednesday on Maximum Fun to indulge your pop culture obsessions.
And to hear in-depth interviews from the movers and the shakers in TV, music, film, and more.
Right, tell me, where are these bars?
You asked the question. I was like so fascinated by last week's question when one of our listeners had asked about where are the lesbian bars, and I had a few of my friends had given me lots of different answers, and I did a deep dive into it, and honestly, a lot of what they said is what I also found through the articles and documentaries that I also watched. There's an article from Into More that I read, Market Watch, The Advocate, and then there were two docs that I watched, both from Broadly that we'll link. They're on YouTube. They're free. One's called The Last Lesbian Bars, where it follows J.D. Latige, and then I think she just goes by Keegan. She just is like one name. So Keegan. Okay. Keegan goes to Dinah Shore.
I've heard of Dinah Shore.
Oh, yeah. So it was fascinating watching the documentary about Dinah Shore. Because I heard about it. Because, like, listen, I've been to many a gay male dance party, circuit party and stuff. But I always wondered, like, do lesbians get down? And Dinah Shore
is... I think Sweet Heat is another one, too.
And there's also Aqua Girl in Miami. So they have their little events spread out. But one thing that was found is that, you know, what's interesting, though, is that although numbers of people who identify as LGBTQ, it's on the rise, our spaces are on the decline. So it's decreased by 12.5% between 2005 and 2011. So just lesbian and gay bars in general have been on the decrease. And there's a number of reasons, I think, even overall, like why, like San Francisco in general, back in like the 1973, had 118 lesbian and gay bars. 118.
Oh, wow.
There are less than 30 today.
What the hell?
So obviously, I think like a big thing to look at is that like in the 70s and 80s, obviously wreaked havoc on our community with AIDS. So we lost a lot of our community. We lost a lot of people. It was like 10,000 people we lost. So that obviously took a hit for it as well. And also in general, I mean, those bars and spaces were the only places that people could go to be free. And a lot has changed as we're even seeing like there was no way like a show like Pose would exist back in like 1973 on mainstream television, you know. So where we are today. And so in the documentary, J.D. Latige goes to four different cities, goes to SF, D.C., and No, SFDC in New Orleans and New York. And apparently, I didn't know this, but back in 85, this... So what I also love about in San Francisco, there were like three people who pop up in this documentary. I'm like, oh my God, I know you. Like JD is interviewing. I'm like, oh my God, look, it's my friend.
That's so fancy. That's exciting.
And so I didn't know this, that there were like 8 lesbian bars back in the 80s in the Castro alone. And today there are 0 like lesbian bars in the Castro at all. And the Lexington, like we talked about this last week, the Lexington closed back in 2015. Mm-hmm. And there's many reasons for this, though, too. A lot of these bars closing, you know, rents have doubled. And so rent for the establishment has doubled. And also rent for, in general has doubled. And although LGBT people were early gentrifiers to this neighborhood, lesbians have been often priced out of their neighborhoods as well. So they're already a small demographic of the population. And then if they're already not living there, and let's say they're living in like Oakland, are they really going to travel all the way across the bridge to come get a beer?
Probably not.
And especially like this one older lesbian talks about, we talked about this briefly last week, the U-Haul theory, which is a stereotype. What, you know, what does a lesbian bring to a first date? A U-Haul. And that, like, there's that stereotype, but she does say, like, you know, there are some truths in some of that, those stereotypes that, like, you do find that, like, sometimes lesbian women, whereas, like, I think even science, like, men, sometimes, I'm not like this, but some men are able to separate sex and love a lot easier than women. So it means like there's more of a hookup culture around the bar scene more so. Whereas with a lot of lesbian bars in the 50s and 60s even it was a lot on community. And if you've already found your partner again and now you're living in Oakland, are you really going to come out to come get that one sort of beer?
Plus, I think that there's more of a, this is just hearsay too. I mean, but I feel like there's more of a lesbian scene out in Oakland.
Feel like that was in some of the findings I found too. And not even just something too, not even just there's a queer scene. A queer scene in Oakland. And that is a lot of the findings that I was finding is that actually women who like women are less identifying. And again, this isn't for everybody, but this is a thing that is a movement that is actually happening, where they're less identifying as lesbians and more as like queer.
Interesting. Yeah, and there's more of a fluidity that seems to be popping up now.
Yeah, because there's even with that queerness allows you to have also a gender, like the lesbian really puts you in sort of a box, and it's sort of a term that's kind of been... A lot of the readings I was saying, like in the interviews, are saying it's been coined by like affluent white women and, you know, POC women who are also trying to explore gender identity as well or re-identifying their gender. Like it's a box, you know, it's very tight fitting into who they really are.
Yeah, like if you are non-binary, then you can't necessarily call yourself a lesbian.
Yeah, and don't even want to be in. And so, like, that's the thing is that also these spaces have not necessarily been the friendliest towards people who don't identify specifically as a lesbian. So, could also explain to why some of them have been shutting down.
Interesting. And also, gay has had more of a multi-dimensional aspect to it than lesbian has. I've noticed. Yeah.
True. JD also went to DC, and there's a bar that's still there called Phase One, which is the longest running lesbian bar in America. Apparently, 8 gay bars have closed in the last 2 years in DC. And Phase One considers itself to be like a community center / museum. Well, in the history behind it, they used to get like tear gassed by like the military or something. And it was like, I mean, this is like, I've never heard of this bar, and it makes me sad I've never heard about it because it seems like right on the lines of like a Stonewall type place. So,
right. Like, why isn't that in the history books too?
Definitely check it out. They also interviewed Valerie Papai Mann, who's the founder of Sapphire Sapphos, which is it's a space that was founded for African-American queer women, specifically women of color. And that they were finding that women had a variety of different issues. So they created a social club, especially intersectional women.
Yes.
So it created a social sort of club. There'd be educational workshops, community forums. And that's, I think, still running Sapphire Sapphos. And but you know what they said, what Valerie said, she's like, you know, it's more than just losing a place to dance, it's losing a community.
Oh yeah, so true. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's the main point.
Also, in JD went to New Orleans, and there used to be a bar called Tableau. Apparently, there used to be 7 lesbian bars, and now there are 0.
Well, it really is decreasing across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There used to be the Grog, which there was a bomb that was planted in there at one point, but it got disarmed.
Oh my God.
The owner passed away in a nursing home because of the events of Katrina. So,
oh my God,
kind of just like looking at the effects of, like, you know, it's fascinating hearing those stories of that we don't, I don't know, I feel like I don't hear enough of those stories about how Katrina was a really fucked up event and moment in our nation's history.
Right, so, it was.
Yeah. And so one of the things, too, that they talked about in this documentary, that the importance of a lot of these lesbian bars, what you would have is intergenerational interactions. So it was a space for people to come to learn their history, where they could learn from, like, there'd be older women there, younger women there. And although there's
so
different
important.
Yeah, which is important to understand and know our history and getting that passed down. And so there is the internet, where you're able to meet people in different ways and apps, but can't really replace the community building aspect as much.
There's something about oral history, you know, like telling and sharing of stories and passing it down within a space. That's just how human nature is. It's what we've done for eons.
That,
so
that's how we've survived, you know? Yeah. That's like, we're a part of that too. We're all oral up in here.
Yeah. Oral history.
And then JD went to NYC, and so something just in New York in particular, a lot of the gay bars that were popping up back in like the 60s are all like mafia owned and run, or they're mafia run, because like the mafia, like, cause it was illegal for homosexuals to gather or to be, essentially, and so they were able to open up gay bars, pay off the cops, watered down the booze, was noted in there as well. Not today. Them drinks is strong. So one of the last remaining bars, at least here in Manhattan, is Henrietta Hudson, which opened up in 1991. And apparently the owner of Henrietta Hudson was like harassed by the mob until one day she was just
God.
They would just like just stand outside her, like the bar, and then like follow her home. And eventually she was like, what do you want? Huh? Yeah. What is it? Let's just get this over with. And they never bothered her again. So,
oh, good.
Confront the mafia, y'all. Don't let them bully you.
We're not promoting that on this show.
They're like, but they said to confront the mafia.
We did not.
And then they also just talk about like all the different bars that used to be in existence. And so then I just went down a rabbit hole. So bear with me as we go down this rabbit hole. And then YouTube was like, but what about this Dinah Shore documentary? And I was like, okay. It warmed my heart. I'm gonna link it. It warmed my heart to just see lesbians or women who like women, queer women, getting down and just in their debauchery fun. There was this one couple, these two black women who were like, and they were like such a diverse group. And that's what some of the women were saying, that they loved about it. It's in Palm Springs, and that they loved it because it was such a diverse group. And that these two black women were like, well, we're about to have a baby, so we were trying to get like crazy before that happens. And
oh, that's smart.
There was just a variety of different folks there. It's a really adorable 10-minute little doc. So I'll definitely like link it there.
Yeah.
And Dinah Shore, the name, do you know who Dinah Shore is?
Yeah, wasn't she like a talk show host or something?
Close. She was a golfer.
I thought she had a show. I don't know why.
It does sound like Dinah Shore needs a show. But she apparently was a golfer. Like, she was a golfer and did a lot for organizing women's golf tournaments and leading women in golf. And so part of the thing is, when you go to Dinah Shore and you party it up at the pool and then you go play golf. Ironic thing is, Dinah Shore was a homophobe.
What?
And there's this huge party festival that's named after her.
What the hell? I mean, that's kind of... I like the irony, but it's wild.
Oh my God. You know what? Do it. Do it up, ladies. Do it up.
Oh my God.
And then there is a place in San Diego called Gossip Grill. Love the name. It's the only 7-day-a-week women's bar in California. So talking about like where have the bars gone, or I think one of the articles was saying it's not so important to seeing like why they don't exist anymore, but saying like, what is the future for these spaces and what's happening? Mm. And so it's called a women's bar, not necessarily a lesbian bar.
Okay.
Because the owner, Mo Gritton, said that, you know, a lesbian bar would struggle. So instead pitched, you know, a women's bar instead and said, it's for everybody. It's for all women, whether you identify as queer, pan, transgender, male to female, female to male. It doesn't matter. It's all encompassing. So. Okay. I like that idea. It's like sort of shifting, because I think a lot of the conversations I've been seeing is that like lesbian is too limiting and that it's outgrown that term and it's outgrown that model. And Gossip Girl has been a hub for when they had a power outage. That's where the folks came back to. It's been their home. People leave their spare keys there. When a member of the community was lost to suicide, they did like a vigil. They had a wedding there.
Nice.
So it's really, again, we were talking.
It is a community.
Exactly. And I think that's the thing that's been sort of missing. And you talked about this earlier, you know, we're in times where we have leadership that's going to try to take us backwards, and us having community spaces is going to be that much more important.
Right. It's so true. Yeah.
So something that was mentioned last week, but finances, and I kind of wanted just to reiterate that of, you know, lesbian couples statistically make less money than gay male couples. So they have less disposable income to be able to like go out to bars and things like that. And there's just been this change in culture. You mentioned this earlier, gender fluidity that's happening. And so really the lesbian bar is kind of just in a bit of a branding crisis. You know, and so it's in Oakland was mentioned in one of the articles that I was reading about, that Oakland has a really poppin', vibing sort of queer scene that is moving with the times and creating spaces. And I think like a lot, like,
go Oakland.
And some, queer women had just felt more like they just didn't feel like lesbian spaces were really for them, that they would actually even feel more comfortable going to a gay space, I guess, like a
interesting
Club Oasis in San Francisco or something.
Yeah.
And
this is fascinating.
Right. Well, the biggest thing I could say from reading these articles at the end, they were saying support these spaces. I think that is a really good important thing. I know myself as a gay identifying man, I need to go to these spaces. I need to go and support these spaces. And also at the same time, supporting these spaces and at the same time and like treating them with the respect that they deserve.
Yeah, respecting the spaces while supporting them.
I'm not going to be that, you know, bachelorette being like, wee! Kiss it up, ladies. I can touch your boobs. I'm a gay man. Ooh, girl.
Yeah, don't
girl,
do that.
Girl. Ooh, you don't identify as a girl? Ooh, I don't care. I'm gay. I'm not doing that. Like a Tasmanian gay devil in your little...
Oh, man. Blowing through.
Woo! You know, there was this one quote from this one trans woman who says that I'm always on the edge when saying why they prefer for queer spaces to lesbian bars. They said, I'm always on edge that an environment like that will generally have older, unfavorable views towards trans women. If a space describes itself as queer, I know that there's at least a baseline acknowledgement, if not acceptance, that trans women exist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting. See, words count, man. This has like been my biggest fight recently is that we're not paying attention to the language that people are using because there's subtext to everything. And that's a perfect example of using subtext to understand how someone truly feels. Like it's true. When you advance, you use different language.
Yep.
So
Well, and you know, my dad recently said, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me is not true. He's like, words do hurt, right? So I wanted to kind of give just real quick just some places that are these new up and coming places of where to go. It's the summertime. If you're traveling, definitely hit these spots and go support these spaces, especially my gay brethren. Like, we need to do our part to make sure that these queer women spaces also stay alive. They need our ducats as well. So Alice was started in 2017. It's been referred to the Soho House for lesbians or queer women.
So fancy.
The parties are invite only, but you can invite, you can essentially, we can recommend friends to come too. I don't think it's that hard.
Okay.
Just kinda
it's not that exclusive.
No, you just send an email.
Okay, that's easy.
Some parties are free, while others, like they have a summer party in the Hamptons that's included transportation, catered food, and an open bar, and costs upwards of $100. But that's actually not a lot of money.
That's not that bad.
Because I know circuit parties that it's like one night, 6 hours, $100. So that's...
Yeah, I mean... That's nothing. I've been to parties that where it was $200 worth. Ooh, but I mean, it was pretty extravagant.
Hello.
It was a fundraiser.
Solange was there.
Yes.
See? Look at you, fancy. There's also...
So, I mean, $100.
Okay. All right. You're like, this is a discount. So Girl Social, it is for LGBT and queer women. It's a counter to Guy Social here in NYC. It's a social club for queer women. So there's also Titillating Tuesdays in Chicago. At the now at the Funky Buddha Lounge. They had queer acts like Lady Sovereign. There's also there is a lot of just sort of like nights out, like Booby Trap in Chicago as well. I also just love the name of these parties.
I know, that's a booby trap. I love that.
Oh my God, there's also like there's Paradiso, which is ironic because there's also a Paradiso in Amsterdam, but it's like gay dude circuit parties. I think people love that name, Paradiso.
Well, I mean, it's because it's Dante. Inferno. That's the third book.
Oh, look at you learning me. I was like, oh, Paradise.
Well, it is Paradise, but Paradiso is the third book of the Dante's Inferno.
The books.
Trinity books. Yeah, whatever.
There's also Milk Milk Lemonade.
Stop it. Did I name this club? What is this?
There's also a Cruise at the Eagle, Cake at the Virgil, Chinatown's Rumors. There's Les Croix.
Oh my God. And, ooh, this is getting real punny.
And sports bra.
Sports bra?
I just, you know what? I only wanted to read those names for you because I was like, I have to read these names to Aneka because I need to get these reactions.
Sports bra. That one's not even trying.
Oh, I also learned the term lesbro from the documentary that I did not know was a term. It's like your friend that's also a lesbian.
Oh.
That lesbians use on other lesbians. And it might be a California specific thing.
A far jump.
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know.
I didn't either, actually, but yeah.
And then this wrapping this up, you know, when they were talking about creating these new spaces and this new sort of adventure into redefining, you know, they said, of course it wasn't meant to send the message that trans men and women and cis men and allies weren't welcome. It was meant to say that this space is queer and women-centric, and anyone who enters the space must honor that. So I think that's a good note to, like, I think in general, going to these spaces, if you're not necessarily like a queer woman, going in the space, and like we've talked about before, just honoring that.
Respect the space.
Yeah. Oh, last one, Party Noir, which is an organization, they're in Chicago, and they're organized by and featuring LGBTQ black women, and they host both dance parties and cultural venues for black health, wellness, and business ventures, and they have built a very strong community for black artists that previously wouldn't have been possible at a lesbian bar, per se. So, the changes are coming, they are here, and I think that's the thing. I think we're in a transformation, and I think that the queer women space is actually, it's in a growing pain, so it looks like, oh, we're losing these spaces, but I think there's new ones that are starting to emerge, and it's important for us to support those, and I think gay men, gay bars, we can take a page out of these. These ladies are leading the way, so...
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. This is great. You know, it was like a little traumatic to hear how many bars were closing, but I do like the uplifting note of how many how it's changing. You know, the culture's changing, the terms are changing, and new things are happening.
New things are happening, yeah. So we still definitely need a rise of, like, I mean, just the number of lesbian bars that have collapsed to the amount of queer spaces that are opening up are not, you know, equal at this point. So we definitely need to, but you're right. Like, at least there's a new phoenix is rising from the ashes.
Hi, I'm Paula Poundstone.
And I'm Adam Felber.
Adam, I haven't gotten one thing done today.
Well, let me see your to-do list. Ah, yeah. Well, here. Make 30-second promo for Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. So at least you're getting that done.
Score!
Except you haven't said what the show is about.
We're like a comedy field guide to life, starring me and you. I give useful advice, and we have real experts to talk about things like how to keep a friend or what to do when you encounter a bear.
Bully for you, but you haven't said where people can find the show.
Oh, MaximumFun.org or wherever you find your podcasts.
So I had the privilege.
What you done did?
I got to interview one of the contestants from this new show that is premiering on NBC, actually July 31st. So it's coming up.
Ooh,
it's like right around
okay.
the corner. It's
yeah.
called Making It. And it, to me, kind of reminds me a little bit of the British baking show, which is on PBS. If you haven't seen it, a bunch of people go into a tent and they bake. And it's really, like, it sounds boring, but it's actually really intriguing and really fascinating and, like, really peaceful. And, like, it's been, like, my escape show when the world has been kind of shit.
Yeah.
And Making It kind of reminds me of that, where it's American and it's a bunch of people going to a tent and they craft. And they craft, and one person gets eliminated each episode. So you really get invested into the characters. I haven't seen it, but I'm like excited to see it because I'm a crafter.
Yeah.
And I love Parks and Rec, and Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman host it. So that should be like really fascinating.
Oh,
and
that's
crazy.
Gonna be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I got the opportunity to interview one of the contestants. Her name is Amber Kemp Gerstle. She is 37. She's a black woman.
Yes,
and,
black crafter.
She was a clinical psychologist, but she like straight up left being a clinical psychologist to become a full-time, like successful blogger.
Wow.
Which is like insane to me. And like the fact that she was able to do that is like so cool. So like, basically in the interview, we'll talk about that. She was really cool. And don't forget to check out the show. And oh, check out her blog too. We talk about it a lot in the interview. It's called DamaskLove.com. She got some really kind of cool things on there that she crafts. And I know there's a lot of crafty people out there that listen to the show. So hopefully you guys get something interesting.
And those who aren't crafty might get inspired to start getting crafty.
Yeah, you never know what might inspire you. Like,
yeah.
If you always like felt like you wanted to do something, like, why not try it, right?
You only got one life to live. Who's right? Who's wrong? Said Miss Janet Jackson, because she's nasty.
I think that's the perfect introduction to this.
Let's get
interview.
Into it. I can't wait to hear.
Let's go. I am so excited that we have Amber Kemp Gerstle. And am I saying that right?
You said it perfectly.
Oh, thank you. Who is going to be on the new NBC show, Making It, which is going to be premiering July 31st. And I'm super excited to talk to you because, one, I craft. That's like one of my biggest things. Yeah, I'm a big old crafter. I love it.
Oh my gosh, I love you already.
Ah, yay, connections. And before we get into the show, I was reading on your bio and there was just a lot of interesting things. So if you don't mind, can we kind of talk about you first?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So in your bio, and I checked out your blog and everything, you left your career as a psychologist to go full-time into crafting.
Yes. Who does that, right?
Yeah.
What kind of lunatic makes that decision?
I am so fascinated. I think you did the dream that all of us crafters would love. So can you just like, how did you do that? What was the process? I just am so curious.
Yeah. So it certainly was a process. Like, I will start by saying I am up there when it comes to risk aversion. Like, I don't do anything that's, like, could potentially not work.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, I'm afraid of, well, then what happens? I need a job. I need to make money. So I never, like, there wasn't a point at which I was like, screw it. We'll just see what happens. There definitely was a process and a plan.
Okay.
Originally, I'm a risk-averse person. I grew up with a mom who very much, like, you need to go to school, you need to get all the degrees.
Yeah, I relate,
be a professional. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You need a real job.
Right.
You need to have a 401k.
Yeah.
You need to do all the things that, like, you know, 90% of functional human being adults do.
Right.
So I did that. And so I went to college and graduate school and got my PhD in child psychology.
Wow.
And that was my plan.
Yeah.
I was working for a while as a child psychologist and started my blog really purely as a hobby. I started it because I was needing to make a card for a friend's wedding and made the card, and in doing so kind of fell down the rabbit hole of all these different craft ideas for how you can make cards. So I started the blog because I was into this card making kind of hobby.
Oh, cool.
And needed a place to share all of my projects.
Yeah.
So the blog was purely a hobby, but I did it, you know, I'm also the type of person, like, every hobby I've ever had kind of has turned into a job because I just don't know. I have, as the cool kids say, I have zero chill. Like,
oh, no.
I don't know how to do anything half-assed. Like,
yeah, you do it 100%.
The absolute most.
Yeah.
So, as it were, the blog kind of grew and turned into this thing that I was doing as a hobby, but really took up a lot of my time. So
oh, wow. Okay,
I was working full-time as a psychologist, working full-time as a blogger.
Mm.
And as the blog grew, I started kind of realizing that I might be able to do it as a business. And so I started treating my blog as a business.
Yeah.
And slowly was getting kind of traction from different people who wanted to work with me.
Wow.
I started, my first gig was working as a blogger for Martha Stewart Living.
Oh my God, I love it.
Like they have this blogger kind of collective. And I was a part of that.
Oh, cool.
I didn't get paid for that. Yeah, it was very cool. Like, I mean, that's a great first thing to do. And I'm so happy I have it on my resume.
That's like the upper echelon for all crafters.
Well, I always felt like if I'm going to work for free, which I do think that when you build a blog, part of your job, you're going to have to work for free. I was like, if I'm going to work for free, I'm at least going to work for free for the big dogs. Like, I'm not going to just work for free for any old body. Like, if I'm going to work for free, I'm going to work for free for Martha Stewart.
No, that makes total sense.
So I did that, and then slowly I started getting jobs that were paying. And I remember probably about a year into blogging, I got an email from a company that wanted to hire me to do 6 months worth of content, and they were going to pay me $18,000 to do it.
Oh.
And it was at that moment when I got that email, I was like, oh,
yeah,
people will actually pay me like decent money to do this.
Yeah,
possible.
A wage.
It's just about connecting with the right brands and kind of leveraging the relationships I have to build paid partnerships. So after that email, literally after that email, I was like, okay, I'm going to save away a year's salary from whatever I make from the blog until I can quit my job.
Wow.
So that's what I did. I saved a year's salary, quit my job, knowing that if I never made any more money from the blog, at least I had a year's salary to kind of figure things out.
Yeah, the cushion.
And that's exactly, that's where the risk averse person in me comes in.
Yeah, I mean, I relate. This is
I had to have a nest egg, and my husband was super supportive of me. He he comes from a family of entrepreneurs, and so he kind of values that. And he was
awesome.
Super supportive of me doing it.
Mm.
He continues to be my biggest cheerleader. But that was then, and now I'm a full time blogger. No more psychology.
Wow, what a story. I'm so glad that you were able to share that with us, Amber, because our podcast is in the Maximum Fun Network, and there are a ton of crafters. In fact, there's like a whole subset of listeners that are a part of a creative crafting group where they share all their projects and everything. So it's like the dream to kind of hear your story and the actual practice that goes into and the setup and the thought process of actually creating a career off of that. And I just want to promote your blog too. And it's damasklove.com. Am I saying that right?
Damask.
It's,
you're all over your pronunciation. Today, my friend.
Thank you. I'm
Damask Love is the name of the blog. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. I your pictures are like gorgeous, and the colors. It's
I really
love it. Yeah. No, it really spoke to me.
Thank you.
So
I will say, one thing I have to throw in is that I get asked a lot about that story about how I went from psychology to crafting, and probably I do a bit of a disservice to the story because I skipped the whole part where like I was up till 4 a.m. every single day.
Oh, yeah.
For months on end. Mm. Like, it was a grind. Yeah. And it really got to the point where when I quit my job, I was, like, having anxiety and, like, really, days of just, like, overwhelmed that because I just had so much on my plate and something had to give. Like, I had just had a kid.
Right.
I was a new mom. I had a full-time blog that I was treating as a business, and I had my full-time job.
Ugh.
So it really, like, it was a hustle for years of getting to where I got. Like, people ask me all the time, I want to quit my job and do crafting full-time. I'm like, great, you can do it.
Yeah.
But just know, there will not be much sleep involved.
Yeah, you got to grind.
It's a grind, and I work more now than I ever did when I was a psychologist. I work all the time.
Oh, wow.
That's just part of the hustle.
Mm, mm-hmm. No, that's an important part to say too, because everybody wants to focus on the glory, but you got to get through the grit.
Oh,
that's,
yeah. It's and there is plenty of it for sure.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, I kind of want to change tracks a little bit because the show is super fascinating to me. I have been, and I think a lot of other people, including our listeners, have been kind of into a lot of escape TV shows. Like, I've been watching a lot of British baking show. And I noticed that making it, is it kind of similar in the structure where it's a group of crafters come and then there's projects that you complete and then one crafter leaves? Or is it, is that a different structure?
So I've only seen one episode of the Great British Bake Off. I think that's the name.
Yeah, yeah.
So I can't speak specifically to how similar they are, but I do think that they're similar in the regard that, you know, it's a competition, but really the show is about the journey of following all of us through our process.
Yeah.
And I've been telling my followers that, like, I truly believe, now I haven't seen any of the episodes yet, but I truly believe that by episode one, you will have forgotten the fact that there is going to be a winner at the end, and you'll be more invested in each of the people and their stories.
See, so, I love that. I love it.
Yeah, exactly, right? Isn't that so great?
Yeah.
So it's all about winning, of course, but then as much as it's about winning, it's totally not. You know what I mean?
Right, right. No.
Every episode, someone will get voted off. My guess is, like, when someone gets eliminated, the viewers are going to, like, you know, be like, what?
Yeah.
They feel invested in each of those people, which is good.
No, that's perfect. It's kind of more of, like, a personality-based instead of, you know, cutthroat survivor kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I really don't think there's much. Again, I haven't seen it. So
yeah, that's true. How it's edited, yeah.
I did happen to be there the whole time. That I do have on my side.
Oh.
It was really supportive environment.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, I love to hear that. So just like other kind of competition reality shows, you have to be versed in pretty much everything because I imagine they throw like the kitchen caboodle at you. So like, how did you prep? Did you just do every single craft known to man? At least like, okay, I know how to knit, I know how to crochet, I know how to, you know, carve wood. Like, how did you even prep for something like this?
You know, I wish there was like that much preparation involved.
Yeah.
I think we all came in with what we had as our arsenal of kind of what we do. What we're comfortable with, what our favorite materials are.
Right.
And the great thing about each of the challenges is that you can really, we were able to interpret it in our own language.
So,
for me, I love paper crafting. So I was able to, in a lot of cases, not all, but in some cases, I was able to interpret the challenge based on the way I like to make things. So there wasn't like, you have to do this, you have to crochet something.
Okay.
Because they want us to, you know, each of us has our individual story and talent, so they want that to come through. That's what I think.
Oh, I love it. And I love that it's paper crafts for you because I make paper flowers. That's one of the crafts that I did. Yeah, I did all the flowers for my wedding out of paper flowers. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. You're going to love this show.
Oh, I'm ready.
I love it.
Oh, I'm so excited. I just love the act of working with hands. It's awesome. Now, did you get to interact with Amy Poehler and Nick Offerman a lot or did they just kind of come in, around? Oh, wow.
No, we interacted a ton. I mean, it was a was a very comfortable set.
Nice.
Of course, we spent like a lot of time in the zone getting done what you need to get done. But yeah, we spent a lot of time with Nick and Amy. They were, I think their role really was to advocate for us and be supportive of us and make sure that we got our story told.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we had a lot of, you know, of course you're going to see a lot of screen time with all of us, with them asking us questions, and Amy learns a ton because she's not really an avid crafter. And then there's Nick, who also learns a lot, but also teaches, because he is an avid, very talented woodworker.
Right, right. Yeah, I love his story about how that was integrated into Parks and Rec, about his woodworking.
Am I allowed to tell you that I've never seen an episode of Parks and Rec?
You can say whatever. Yeah, That was probably an advantage going in, you know. So
I purposefully did not watch that show. As soon as I found out I was going to maybe be on this show,
yeah,
I like didn't watch it. But I did not want to go in there thinking anything. I didn't want to have any
right,
you know,
that's smart
ideas about.
Yeah, that is.
So yeah, I've never seen that episode. Still haven't.
Wow. Oh man. Well, maybe you should. Maybe you should take some time to watch it. It's a great show.
I watch it, right? But I don't know. I just, now that I've met Nick and Amy and know them the way they are, I'm like, well, no need.
That's true. It's true. Yeah, I know. Oh man, that just blew my mind, really, kind of. I love it.
I went through the options. I was like, do I pretend that I've seen? Do I pretend that I've seen Parks and Rec right now?
No, you just got to be honest. I love that. You got to speak your truth. So,
yeah, never seen an episode.
Oh man. So what would you say is your most, so like what I mentioned before were the paper flowers that I did for my wedding, which like nearly destroyed me. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have fingerprints left, but
I DIY'd my whole wedding too. I made every invitation. I made every save the date.
Oh, I love it.
I will never do it again.
Yes. Yeah, see, I mean, you learn. That brings me to my question though. Like what would you say would be like your Moby Dick of crafts? Like what was your giant white whale that like you completed, you were so proud of, you did it?
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
The show made all of us do so many things that were outside of our comfort zone that I would never have done.
Oh, wow.
That every project was like, I did it, and now I can do anything.
Wow.
You know, I left the show feeling like there is no creative challenge I can't take on now, because there's just so many things I did that I either never did before, never did on that scale, never did under that time constraint. Like, there's so much of that.
Wow.
That there's no way to pick one, because it was everything.
Wow. So the show is the white whale, basically.
Exactly. I mean, for me, at least. I will say that for me.
Yeah.
I can speak for myself. I don't know about other people, but I know for me, you know, my role as a blogger and an influencer is to inspire people with projects that are doable. And so I generally stick to a comfortable wheelhouse so that I can make other people feel comfortable about their skills.
Yeah.
But in this case, I had to go beyond that and do things that were outside of my comfort zone. And think on the fly. So yeah, it was the whole, everything you see me make is my, like, my white whale.
Wow. That's amazing. That is quite a pitch. I'm like ready to watch this now. That's like so exciting. So just kind of wrapping up, what do you have coming up aside from the show is exciting and it's about to premiere, but I'm sure you have some other things cooking that you're working on coming in the future too.
So I will tell you, the show has really, the show was a big commitment, and doing it was something that like I knew going in that if I'm going to do it, I have to do it right.
Yeah.
And it's easily the hardest, most challenging creative thing I've ever done.
Wow.
And so now that we're getting ready to see it, my big job, I think, is to make sure that time spent is worthwhile. So I'm doing a lot to make sure that people know about me being on the show, that people are engaged with it, that my following is really excited about it. So I have a ton of projects that I'm planning to do that are kind of in conjunction with the show, so that people feel like there's I have a feeling that once people watch the show, they're going to want more.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and give them more.
Excellent. Yes.
Off, you know, after the show is done. So I have all these projects planned that you'll see me rolling out after as the episodes come out.
Mm.
So I have that. Gosh, I have so much, a lot going on.
That's awesome.
Because the other thing is, just because the show is on does not mean my business stops.
Right,
it's
yeah.
The contrary, I hope it does the opposite.
It booms, yeah.
So I think, you know, you'll see me right now. I'm working on a potential product line that could release later this year or next year.
Oh, exciting.
That's exciting. What else? I mean, I'm already so busy, thank God. Like, my business keeps me busy. So you'll see me do more of the same. Just follow me on Damask Love, read my blog, sign up for the newsletter, do all the things so you can find out what I'm up to.
Oh, great. Well, thank you again, Amber, for being on our show today. I'm sure all of our listeners are going to be super excited to check out your blog, to check out the show, Making It. It's coming out right around the corner, July 31st, 10 p.m., I believe. And we'll be rooting for you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to have been on your show. I'm so excited to hear that you have such a heavy contingency of crafters.
I
want to say hello to all those people and hopefully they'll join the Damask Love family.
Oh, hell yeah. We're there. We're there for sure.
Awesome. That's so great.
Yay. Well, thank you and have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Hot damn.
Did you like that? That was fun.
Super cute. Super cute.
Just very light, very easy. She's a very nice lady. It was cool.
But you know my inner Dina Lohan is now thinking, okay, baby girl, Neke, how are we going to get you on that show?
Nah.
I need my baby girl crafting away on that show. I just see dollar signs. Okay.
I don't know. We'll see.
I've seen them blankets you make. Okay.
I gotta watch that show to see. You make them blankets. I know. I've made a lot of things.
I went to your wedding. Aneke handcrafted her whole wedding, start to finish, left to right, up to down.
Like I said, I made those paper flowers. I'm not lying.
They were amazing. I still to this day cannot. I remember you were like, I'm making paper flowers. And like, you know, when you don't really know the thing
so
that your friend is.
So many people doubted me, including my father.
And then you show up and like you look at the flowers, you just want to cry because they're so beautiful and stunning.
Thank you. I wasn't going to put garbage out on the tables.
Nope. It was just like, I folded this paper. Like, because I know if I were to make, like, if I were to make paper flowers, I know what it would look like. And it just looked like, you know, some crumpled ass paper.
No, stop.
I was like, okay, Neke, this is what you want. But now I get it.
You saw the vision.
Yeah. My Dina Lohan was just like, all right, baby girl, how are we going to make this into a business, okay?
I always see the business. Sometimes it's just for pleasure.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, my brain doesn't wrap around that. What? It's not business.
Fun?
This isn't for fun. I don't get it. We had a great episode.
Yeah,
I'm
this was
wet.
Good.
I am so wet with this episode.
We need to get you some air so you can dry off.
I'm like hotboxed in my room because if I open up my windows, you're going to get the music of the streets of New York City into this podcast.
It is time for you to get some of that music of the streets and some of that wind.
Yeah.
Because we can't have you dehydrating yourself through sweat.
No. We cannot. We got a tweet of the week.
Yeah. So this one is from @WooNex, and they write, I accidentally watched some vids while signed into my work's YouTube account, and now people are wondering why we're getting all these Patti LaBelle recommendations. Special thanks to Minority Corner for making this all possible.
I died when I read that text. That is hilarious. I could only imagine people at work like, why is all this Patti LaBelle coming? And you knew.
Well, they shouldn't be questioning it. They should be thanking it.
They should be like, thank God this happened. Thank my Patty stars.
Thank you for all these Patty stars. Recommendations.
And then another tweet of the week, @LVDan13 wrote, just listen and love the chat around court pride involvement. In Vegas, pride has been small and not largely court sponsored. To be able to represent myself and my LGBTQIA++, TMs is a privilege we hadn't had for long. It helps that my co acts right by LGBTQIA++ people each day. So just get involved in the conversation. Yeah, I just appreciated that.
Yeah, you could tweet at us at Minority Corner, and then you spell corner with a K. We're right there. We see them. It's awesome. We really appreciate your tweets. Thank you guys so much. We like it's such good feedback. It's awesome.
Yeah, get involved in the conversation. And you can also email minoritycorner@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And we also have a Corner Kids Playground. There's always new people popping up and really great conversations happening there as well. And on any of these channels, you can always ask Minority Corner anything.
Yeah, so we can compile another episode. Because the last time, that last episode was really fun. That was awesome. And that was all great. Because of you guys. Like,
yeah, it's literally all of your contributions.
That continued into this episode.
Yeah, you like literally built these last two episodes. So dope.
Yeah, thank you guys. It's been really fun.
All right. Well, I got to get toweled off. Thank you to Woody,
yes,
our editor.
Thank you.
And
Brown Out
for the musica.
Yes. Thank you. And thank you for listening. And
yes. Thank you to you all for listening to Minority Corner.
Because together,
we're the majority. Got it.
Bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.